From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Now here's your host, Mark Kepler.
Back in 2012, the California Stewardship Network, an alliance promoting economic vitality, and California Forward, a bipartisan good government reform effort, hosted the first ever California Economic Summit. Over the last 4 years, the summit has worked with regional and state leaders to develop a shared agenda to generate jobs and improve regional competitiveness. What do the unique regions of the state have to do to promote job creation and create a stronger economy for the state as a whole? We'll ask. James Mayer, President and CEO of California Forward. Fred Silva, Senior Fiscal Policy Advisor for California Forward. Matt Leger, Research Analyst with SEIU United Health Workers. Kathy Martin, Vice President of Workforce Policy for the California Hospital Association. And Kathy Creswell, a Housing Policy Specialist with Creswell Consulting.
Additional funding for the Matty Report made possible by a grant from the wonderful company, harvesting health and happiness around the world, from the California Channel at the State Capitol and the Matty Institute. It's the Matty Report with Executive Director of the Matty Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. The California Economic Summit is an attempt to connect regional and state leaders to develop a shared agenda to generate jobs and improve regional competitiveness. One of the founders of that effort is with us today, James Mayer, the President and CEO of Cal Forward, a bipartisan good government reform group. Welcome to Matty Report.
Happy to be here.
So, Jim, tell us a little bit about the California Economic Summit, the who, what, when, where, why, how. Who's involved? What's the general idea?
We launched this about 5 years ago in this partnership with those regional organizations you mentioned, because there was the belief that the state really didn't have a coherent plan to do economic recovery and grow the kind of resilient economies we needed at the community and regional level. And we needed a venue to bring together state, local, regional leaders from public, private, and civic sectors to really figure out what those policy drivers were and then to steadily make progress towards what we wanted in state law and local practice.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seemed like you had silos before, right? The state was doing its thing or the localities were doing its thing. You've kind of done a hybrid approach, it sounds like, with this regional approach.
Absolutely. And what we found was the regions actually had economic strategies, but they hadn't counted on any action from the state. They literally had written off the state as a partner. But yet they need the state. They need the state resources. The state regulations are either helping or hurting them. And this has created a way to both connect what regions were needing to do and candidly gave state leaders a sound way of understanding what regions needed.
Now, I remember we were doing the California partnership with the San Joaquin Valley. That was one of these kinds of regional efforts. And legislators were going to this partnership and saying, what legislation do you need to help move whatever the agenda was for, whether it's air quality or economic development, what have you. So I assume that you've got some, with this summit, you set up some annual goals. How do you make sure those goals are accomplished?
We do set annual goals, and we base that on the priorities of the regions. And each year, we have work that's underway around workforce and around infrastructure investment. And we work on those goals all year long, and then people come together at the summit each year to assess the progress, to identify what we need to get done in the next year or so, and then to organize and commit to moving those things forward. So there's literally hundreds of people involved in the Economic Summit. It's an event. It's a great event. People want to come. They network. It's exciting. They get to meet people from different regions and at the state. But the real heavy work happens the other 364 right. days of the year.
Yeah. I want to ask you, this has been in existence since 2012. Can you point to some tangible improvements, changes that have come about as a result of the summit?
Absolutely. One of the biggest high priorities in every region is growing their human capital, workforce development, making sure we've got enough people with the skills necessary to fuel their economies and get jobs that are paying enough to help them support their families. And there's been steady progress in identifying things that the state needed to do to grow that CTE pipeline, and we've had a number of bills.
Career technical education,
and this is advanced manufacturing and healthcare and working in the green economy, lots of very tangible jobs. And this last year, in partnership with the California Community College Chancellor's Office, we championed and got through the Strong Workforce Program, which puts not only more money into this, but does it exactly the way the regions wanted. regional colleges have to cooperate with each other and consult with their employers. The money is going to flow based on need and ability to make a difference in people's lives.
So it's real skills that are attached to real jobs that employers say they need.
And there's a performance and accountability built into this to make sure it actually works.
You know, it's interesting. You look at statistics and you find that, you know, the middle class is shrinking, poverty is growing. There's really no easy fix here, is there? I mean, there's no silver bullet. It's a multitude of things we need to do.
One of the things we're doing in this summit is we've done some analysis about what are all those primary drivers for both persistent poverty or lack of upward mobility. And it's very clear we're going to have to both grow workforce but also grow jobs. And we're going to have to do something about the high cost of living, particularly housing. The mix of those things are different in every region, but every region has to tackle those.
You know, it's a really interesting point about housing that you're making, that when you look at studies, they say that's a big driver for poverty in California because people are spending over a third of their salaries on housing alone. That's a big deal.
And in fact, wages are not going to rise as fast as housing prices, so we're actually going to lose ground against poverty. The summit is the only place where all of those stakeholders that fight about that issue come together to talk about things they can agree on in the context of all the people who are impacted by the answers, the millennial leaders, the employers. The hospital association cares as much about housing as they do workforce. This is what the summit is, the place where people come together to talk about the big solutions.
December 13th and 14th in Sacramento. You know, I want to ask you about the summit. They're really focusing on three issues. They are housing, workforce issues, and water infrastructure. Why those three issues? And I'm wondering, is any one more important than the other? Are they interdependent?
No, they aren't. And they are independent. And
the interdependent, you're
they
saying.
They are interdependent. Mm-hmm. And if you, those three drivers I just referenced are actually represented by those. So workforce is clearly a big issue here. People have to be able to participate in this economy. Housing is the single biggest cost driver to our cost of living. And infrastructure is usually the first thing we look to government do in terms of trying to help create jobs. And so part of this year, so we've always been trying to be big enough to impact the solution. But specific enough to make progress. It's walking that fine line. This year, we're going to look at what we've done and ask ourselves, do we have a broad enough, deep enough agenda that we're advancing fast enough to actually restore upward mobility?
Well, I want to thank James Mayer from California Forward for joining us. Up next, we're going to talk about one of those issues, infrastructure issues generally, and water in particular. This is the Matty Report. Welcome back. Some suggest with some alarm that California's infrastructure is stressed beyond capacity. How does the state do more to invest in things like bridges, roads, airports, rail lines, pipes to maintain our economic competitiveness? Our guest is Fred Silva, Senior Fiscal Policy Advisor with California Forward. Welcome back to the Matty Report.
Thank you, Mark.
So, roads. People say they're crumbling. Water, where is it? Yet there doesn't appear to be a big appetite for spending money to fix these problems. What's the summit's prescription?
Well, you know, the summit has focused on the strength of our economic regions and where the investment should take place. Frankly, the state has been ambivalent about that. Currently, on the November ballot, there are 13 counties that have sales tax increases to invest more in transportation. Half of the state's population will be participating in that discussion. So the state looks at transportation finance as a need to fix it first. They want to repair roads. But the question is, how do we add capacity to our growing economic regions? And for that, the summit has had as a priority to have means to do that, creating 2 years ago something known as a new financing authority known as Enhanced Infrastructure Financing
District. I wanted to ask you about those Enhanced Infrastructure Financing Districts. How do they work?
Well, the whole concept is to take, as I mentioned, a regional approach to transportation needs or water resource needs or other infrastructure needs to bring counties and cities and special districts together to use their financing capacity to continue investments in their regional economies.
You know, it sounds like a little bit like the self-help transportation taxes that some counties pass, like in Fresno County, for example, Measure C, as a way to kind of give more money for road projects. You know, are you seeing more counties doing that?
Yes, indeed. That's partly because the state has not been interested in putting more money into transportation capacity. They're interested in putting more money into the maintenance of the state highway system. But when it comes to connectivity between the eastern part of Los Angeles and the western part of Los Angeles, they frankly have had limited interest, which is why so much local initiative and local interest is there. What we tried to do with this new financing authority is to bring both counties and cities together to in order to capture their growth of their own economies and invest that into infrastructure.
It's also that you can leverage that money. So a lot of times when you go out to get federal or state grants, they want you to match those funds. If you have local funds to match them, then you double the impact.
Exactly. And that's partly why the summit took on that agenda rather than just trying to convince the state to put more money in to get, again, the growth in the local economies to be able to provide that match to state interest if we could get the state to put more resources
in. It sounds a little bit like this is almost like redevelopment agencies 2.0. Is this similar to a redevelopment agency?
Well, it's a bit different. Remember that this happened after the repeal of redevelopment,
right,
where the
right.
The summit,
is this filling that gap?
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason that this got on the agenda of the summit in 2014 is that the question was, do we replace redevelopment? And the answer to that from local civic folks who were engaged in it said, actually, we don't want to simply put redevelopment back. We want a broader set of authorities, which is why they went with enhancing or improving the infrastructure financing district statute that was already on the books.
Do you have some examples of where this has been implemented successfully?
Yeah, it's being implemented at this stage where cities, and in some cases cities and counties, are doing all the feasibility work to put that together. The city of Laverne is working with the county of Los Angeles to put together a mixed-use housing and transportation project. Now, because this statute is fairly new, the battery of economic development consultants and lawyers and the rest of it are beginning to put the framework together. Once those cities start that process, then we believe that more and more cities and counties in sub-regions, whether it's the San Gabriel Valley or in the South Bay in San Francisco, or for that matter, the southern part of the valley, will see the ease with which these financing authorities can be put together.
Yeah, it's a wide array of projects that you can do with these districts.
Yes.
Besides these, and I don't remember the name here, Enhanced Infrastructure Finance Districts, you need an acronym, something shorter than that. But anyway, in addition to that, any other money coming from any other sources?
Well, there are resources that come from the state through the state's water bond. Mm-hmm. Those resources often require some local match, as you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's important for these two things to be aligned with both state money and federal money. I'm sorry, state money and local money. The federal government has put less and less resources into infrastructure, and it's hard to know when they'll come to grips with it.
Kind of like it sounds like pulling up yourself by your own bootstraps in many ways. Let me ask you this, though. What does the Economic Summit hope to accomplish when it comes to infrastructure issues?
Well, this next summit, which will be in December, we're focusing on two issues. One of them is the infrastructure needed for housing. Because these issues are all interrelated, housing is related to jobs are related to housing. Infrastructure supports housing and supports those families that live in those mm-hmm. houses. So we're going to be focusing on how to get more infrastructure related to housing, whether it's water or transportation or waste management.
Yeah, and then there's also workforce development, which is the third
yes.
part of that process.
Right.
I'm going to thank Fred Silva from Cal Ford for joining us. Up next, we're going to talk about the 1 million qualified worker challenge that's part of the Economic Summit. That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. Projections are that California could be short 1 million qualified workers over the next 10 years. How can we avert that economic catastrophe? Our guests have not only been studying the problem, they've been living it. Kathy Martin is the Vice President of Workforce Policy for the California Hospital Association. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Leger is a research analyst with SEIU, UHW, United Health Workers. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kathy, let me start with you. Most employers tell you that, you know, their need is really for qualified workers. That's really the problem here. Why is California so short in the number of qualified workers that it needs?
Well, you know, the shortage of skilled workers is really not a California-only problem. It's a nationwide problem. Baby boomers are at retirement age, and they are retiring in great numbers and all at once. For healthcare, this is complicated by the fact that we have nurses and critical health professionals leaving the workforce all at one time, while at the same time we have this increased need for healthcare services because we have this older population
aging
to
population.
Care for. We have sicker patients, and then we have the Affordable Care Act, which has expanded coverage, so more people have access.
You're getting hit by double whammies or triple whammies.
Exactly.
Here.
So it's a perfect storm brewing out there where we have the need for skilled workers, yet a scarcity of workers.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting, Matt, you're with a union, Service Employees International Union, a very big union. Why would a union care about workforce development and qualified workers? It would think that would be a management issue.
No, this is an issue for all of California. For us, we think about it when there's a shortage of healthcare workers, it causes delays in access to care. And we know that that can have detrimental effects on our communities. And as it's against our values of healthcare workers to cause those sorts of things. So we know that we need to develop the workforce. On top of that, we know that these are good middle-class jobs, and we have to make sure that there's pathways for people to be able to get those jobs in California.
You know, it's interesting to see the cooperation between management and labor addressing an issue. And as a labor management arbitrator, I'm happy to see you guys do that. So, Kathy, the Economic Summit is talking about something called a strong workforce program. What specifically is that? How would it work?
Well, the Economic Summit support of a strong workforce program was really instrumental in bringing together education, business, government, and labor so that we could work together on ensuring that California employers have the skilled workforce we need now and in the future so that we can keep California globally competitive from an economic standpoint. Through the Strong Workforce Task Force, leaders throughout California came together to develop recommendations that would move the state forward in terms of career technical education, which is where many of these workers attain their education and their skills. These, as Matt said, these are good jobs, high demand, and good wages. So we want to really make sure that the state has the capacity to provide that education and training. And the summit helps support the efforts of the Strong Workforce Program.
Yeah, and the career technical education, those are really good jobs that can come out of that. And people don't realize, I think they need a four-year college degree.
Yes.
Maybe not so much. You can go to a community college, get some great training for a job that pays very well.
Absolutely.
Matt, let me ask you this. Do you think this approach that the Economic Summit has really seems to be a regional approach? Why do you think a regional approach is better than, let's say, a monolithic statewide approach?
Yeah, well, the most important part about the regional approach is because the needs of the Bay Area, Los Angeles, and Fresno are different, and particularly for healthcare workers. In Los Angeles, you need many more bilingual speakers, and in Bay Area, you need different types of workers as well. Fresno, you need much more experience with asthma care. So the regional approach allows you to meet those regional needs and bring together the community, labor organizations, employers, so they can all provide students and local employers for the right skill set.
Do you agree?
Absolutely. And I think that through a regional sector strategy approach, we can really leverage all of the assets in a region in a much more efficient way. With diminishing resources for everyone, we need to come together as regions to look at how we can solve some of our workforce problems.
And it's interesting. It seems like you're breaking down some of those silos. Mm-hmm. And it used to be the state as one silo, or maybe each local community. But you're saying, no, there's a hybrid here, a regional approach.
Yes.
Because the reality is that problems don't stop at borders, right? I mean, if between cities or between counties, it's usually region-wide.
Right.
We certainly see that in the San Joaquin Valley. Kathy, let me ask you this. You got this 1 million worker goal, a huge goal, in 10 years. What are the short-term goals to reach that long-term goal?
Well, the 1 million goal is not just healthcare, so I think it's important to point that out. That's really, 1 million workers,
right,
that
qualified
we need.
Workers, correct.
Qualified workers. But I think for, one of the recommendations that came out of the Strong Workforce Task Force was the need for the community colleges who are providing much of this training and education to be able to respond to industry quickly. And if that means a new program for a high-demand occupation needs to be developed, the college needs the ability to put that together quickly. So one of the recommendations was to streamline and shorten the curriculum approval process. And that's important, especially for California hospital members, because when we're a rapidly changing industry and we need programs to come up quickly.
Connecting it to the real world, it
Absolutely.
Sounds like.
Absolutely.
So, Matt, let me ask you this. 1 million more qualified workers, how are we going to know if this goal has been achieved?
Well, we need to continue to push for some of the short-term goals, like streamline curriculum, like Kathy mentioned, and ensure that we continue to have a system that supports workers through that process and students through that process, because these are really demanding career and training courses. And, you know, if we can't have a system that supports people, then they really won't have the type of workforce we need. And these are good paying jobs, and people want these jobs, but it can be very difficult to overcome all the sort of barriers that are currently in place.
Okay, well, I want to thank Matt Leger with SEIU and Kathy Martin with the Hospital Association for joining us. So where are those workers going to live? Up next, a conversation about California's housing crisis and trying to build a million new homes in the next decade. That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report. Welcome back. The nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office has cited housing, particularly along the coast, as a major contributor to income inequality. What can be done to address California's housing crisis? Our guest is Kathy Creswell, a housing policy specialist with Creswell Consulting. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So what are the main issues that are adversely affecting the supply of housing?
Well, there's a lot of things, and it's a very complex, but predominantly we're looking at the supply of housing, both how it is zoned and regulated in terms of whether it's providing a mix of housing for ownership as well as renter households, also the regulation of housing, so local governments can control how much density is provided, the cost through requirements of high parking requirements, also the funding and financing of housing. So we don't have enough resources to actually fund and support affordable development. And then in addition, all of the infrastructure and all the systems needed to help development occur in the right places are also lacking. So we need more infrastructure resources. And then in addition, there is a fundamental lack of support for growth and housing development in particular, which really impacts our ability to get the amount of housing and the affordability of housing we need.
Is this a statewide issue or is this a local issue, you know, specific, let's say, to the coast?
No, it is absolutely a statewide issue. While the problems along our coastline are probably most severe, we have a statewide problem. There isn't a county in California which doesn't have a shortage of affordable housing.
And when you define affordable housing, you're saying we spend more than 30% of your take-home pay basically on housing.
Yes.
That's a chunk of change. I mean, if you add that, you add a car, you add, you know, food, and not much left over.
And lower-income households are paying up to 50 and 60% and more of their need. But it's also, we are 12% of the nation's population, and we have 20% of the homeless population. Median incomes are going down at the same time rents and ownership or median value of homes is going up. And even in even in places that are generally considered affordable, for example, Sacramento and Santa Barbara, in both of those places, there are only 18 to 19 available and affordable homes for every 100 extremely low-income households who need them. So it is definitely statewide.
You know, is it also not just, you know, geographic or, you know, in general regions, but also actually where housing is built? Like, is it near jobs or is it near transit? Is that also an issue?
Yes. Really, across the state, we need housing everywhere, but we also need to put housing where it can have both co-benefits. So when we are doing transit-oriented housing along transit corridors, we are reducing commute times, which increases worker productivity. We are reducing climate change, or we are addressing climate objectives. When we build infill, we are addressing potentially the need in rural and in some of the Central Valley areas, the need to less of a need to convert
ag
land, right. And also meeting environmental goals. So you're right. And when we do housing right in the right locations, we can have many, many multiple benefits.
Actions are being proposed in this California Economic Summit to meet this 1 million home challenge?
So we're looking at a combination of fiscal and regulatory reforms. So recognizing the need on the fiscal that we need a permanent funding source that would help subsidize housing for that segment of our communities that the market will never be able to meet. elderly, disabled, chronic homeless. So we need the state to provide a permanent regular funding source. And then we also need to look at incentivizing local governments.
Now, I was going to ask you, is that where kind of the action is a lot with local governments in terms of reducing impact fees, which is a big deal, or regulations?
Absolutely. The most critical decisions about housing supply and affordability happen at the local level. And so we need to help incentivize local governments to make some of the tough choices that they are forced to make when there is a lack of resources, there is a lack of infrastructure. And so we want to look at, for those communities who are trying to do the right thing, providing a mechanism that would enable them to have a greater share of the property tax when they are perhaps making some of the regulatory reforms that we think that are needed to expedite processing, to create more certainty in the processing, and then to actually link real outcomes with those incentives.
It's all connected. I want to thank Kathy Creswell for joining us and the other members of the California Economic Summit. If you want to stay up with state and local politics, you can follow the Maddie Institute on Facebook, Twitter, or log on to our website at maddieinstitute.org.
You're listening to the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition, on KMJ.
With Governor Jerry Brown termed out in 2018, the race is already on to replace him. The crowded field includes two former big city mayors, former San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom, and our guest, former LA Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. What are his views on the important issues facing California? A discussion with former LA Mayor and candidate for governor Antonio Villaraigosa.
Additional funding for the Maddie Report made possible by a grant from the wonderful company, harvesting health and happiness around the world. Chevron's Coalinga oil field and Fresno County have been doing side by side for over 100 years. Learn more at doers.com. From the California Channel at the State Capitol and the Maddie Institute, it's the Maddie Report with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. While the race is on to replace Governor Jerry Brown, one of the current front runners is our guest, former LA Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome to be here. So right out of the box. So why do you want to be governor?
First of all, I knew Ken Maddie. It's an honor to be here. Ken and I were friends. He was a great man, a great bipartisan leader, a man of dignity and grace. So it's great to be with you.
Well, thank you very much. So what's your vision for California?
Well, look, I was born and raised here. Grandpa came here 100 years ago. This is a great state. It's given me more than I could have ever imagined. Former Speaker of the state of California and also Mayor of Los Angeles. But it's a state with the fifth largest economy in the world and the highest effective poverty rate in the United States of America.
That probably surprises a lot of people.
It does surprise a lot of people. I knew that going in because I had been on a listening tour. I've been to three of the top five cities with the highest poverty rate. They're in the Central Valley. LA is 14th. San Bernardino is number 9. We have an economy the size of France and a poverty rate akin to Romania.
Yeah, so how do you make that vision a reality? You're trying to change the situation. How do you do it?
Well, I think what we have to do is we're going to have to grow our economy. We're going to have to improve our business climate, particularly for small business. We're going to have to simplify our regulations. But we're also going to have to educate and train our future workforce. We have a graduation rate of about 80% in this state. A good portion of them, only about 13% of the 60% of the kids who are Black and Latino are going to a four-year college, and only 9% of them are completing it.
Yeah, there's a big shortfall of college graduates, too, in the state.
In the whole state, that's what I'm speaking of. So we've got to educate more of our kids. We've got to train them for the jobs of the 21st century, be 1.5 million down the number of college graduates we need by 2025, and 1 million down the number of people with specialized skills.
Well, the reality is a lot of these programs that you're going to do to correct the situation cost money. How are you going to pay for it?
Well, that's why I started with growing our economy. improving our business climate. We've got to jumpstart this economy in a way that we do have the resources. And then, I was sharing a few minutes ago, you know, we've got to show that we're doing more with the money that we got. We've got to find efficiencies. You know, Los Angeles, I took on our public schools. We had a 44% graduation rate. One out of three schools were failing. By the time we finished, it was a 72% graduation rate. One out of 10 schools were failing. We did that in the middle of a recession when they were actually cutting education. So we've got to drive down costs, find efficiencies in our government so that we have more resources and we can make the case that we got to invest more.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that it looks like, given the fact that Democrats have a 19% advantage over Republicans, this could end up being a Democratic race between two Democrats. So my question to you is, what specific leadership traits distinguishes you from other major candidates?
You just said it. Leadership. I got a track record. I'm the author of Healthy Families. 750,000 kids got health care. While I was Speaker of the California State Assembly, we were investing in education. We reduced class sizes. You know, I was someone as mayor who took on a broken economy. We doubled the number of small businesses in Los Angeles from 2010 to 2013. I have a track record. You know, crime went down. Violent crime went down 49% while I was mayor. A 45% drop
by the,
in homicide.
By the way, PolitiFact says that's a true statement. I checked on that. So
they did say that's a true statement. And also the high school graduation rate going from 44 to 72% was also a true statement.
It was interesting when I was reading up about you, you take some interesting positions, and you're going to correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is, you know, you support high-speed rail, you support the roads, the $52 billion roads improvement plan, but you're supportive of charter schools, which is unusual for a Democratic candidate. You're also supportive of CEQA reform, the environmental law. Interesting positioning.
You know, we're broken into political tribes, if you will, Democrats and Republicans, and oftentimes driven by ideology. I want to be practical. I was a mayor of a city akin to a country. When you look at its size, its diversity, its population, the fact is the next governor can't be an ideologue. You got to be practical. You got to work with Democrats and Republicans. I've said I support charter schools, but I also support traditional public schools. But what I'm looking for are good schools for our kids. I'm not looking for, you know, schools that are failing. And the same is true with CEQA reform. You know, when you look at, this is the toughest state to build anything in. We can have tough environmental standards and simplify and shorten them, and that's what I want to do.
Okay, great. That's almost like a city state. You're in charge of a city state in Los Angeles, really.
That's exactly what I was in charge of.
Okay, well,
it's bigger than many states in the nation.
And some countries. So now up next, an in-depth discussion of two of the hottest topics in state politics, providing affordable housing and building an adequate infrastructure, things like roads and water, to serve California's growing economy. That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. I'm Mark Kepler with the Maddie Institute. We're talking with former L.A. mayor and candidate for governor, Antonio Villaraigosa. Let's talk about some current issues the state's dealing with. One of the big issues is affordable housing. And there's a lot of ways you can deal with that issue. One way, you can try to spend your way out of it. So with bonds or tax credits or redevelopment agencies, RDAs. Another way you could approach this is focusing on regulatory reform, things like amending CEQA, like we just talked about, to kind of free up the private sector to meet demand. What do you think needs to be done?
All of the above.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
I mean, look, it's not just a crisis, it's a disaster. Yeah. People talk about, you know, home ownership is the pillar of the American dream. People can't even rent a home right now. So we got to do both. And the state has got to partner with cities and counties, reward cities and counties that are putting up their own money, bring back redevelopment 2.0.
Talk a little about redevelopment for a second. Why do you think that's important?
Well, they took redevelopment away while they were trying to balance their budget. Mm-hmm. They balanced it on the backs of cities and counties. What have we seen is a growing affordability crisis in housing.
Because a lot of that money was used for affordable housing.
Right, and a growing homelessness crisis. So the state has got to partner with cities and counties who have a plan for homelessness, for workforce and affordable housing, for transit-oriented development, and importantly, to shorten and simplify the approval process.
You know, you were talking about that happened back in, if my notes are right, 2011, where Governor Brown kind of cut back on RDAs about $2 billion. Are you looking to see that money reinstated?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
You know, look.
That's a straightforward answer.
Fine.
Great. So let's talk about highways and roads. So those are big infrastructure issues. Obviously, you're dealing in L.A. with gridlock and all of it. So they've got this new transportation tax, $5.2 billion a year for 10 years, each year for 10 years. Was it necessary?
It's tough on people who are barely making ends meet, who have to travel far to go to and from work. But they hadn't passed a state gas tax since, I think,
the early 90s.
1990s.
Right.
I think 90 or 92. The fact is, we need that money. But we got to put it in a lockbox. You know, you can't just say you're going to raise that money and then spend it on something
else. That was a lot of people's concerns.
It's got to be in a lockbox. And we can't just keep on raising taxes. So what do we need to do? Innovative financing, like I did in Los Angeles, where we built three light rail lines and one busway.
And you did that by leveraging, by leveraging local tax dollars.
That's exactly right, with federal dollars and federal bonds that got repaid. But also, on federal loans that got repaid, but also shortening the approval process for these infrastructure projects. I was able to get a shortened approval process for a football stadium. Why not for affordable housing? Why not for building highways and rebuilding our bridges and our roads?
Let me ask you a little bit about mass transit, you know, in the obviously larger urban areas, but also high-speed rail. What are your thoughts on that?
I support high-speed rail, and I do, because it connects the two engines of the California economy.
Silicon Valley?
The Bay Area and Southern California, with the one place where we have affordable housing and don't have a diversified economy. So I want to use this train for economic development in the valley, for affordable housing, that people who live in those other two areas can live in the valley. We got to drive down engineering costs, and we got to look at public-private partnerships. The state can't do it alone.
Right.
You know, everywhere around the world, the private sector builds, not just or either with the government or on their own. They build highways and bridges and roads. We can do that
together. It sounds a lot like the leveraging idea you had in Los Angeles.
Exactly right. And it was very successful, as you know.
Let's talk about another issue they never talk about, and that's water. Perennially, we're always talking about water. So do you support more dams? What about the governor's $17 billion Delta plan?
You know, like
I
said,
those issues?
Like I said, I'm a practical person. This is a crisis. I support all of the above. I think we need to recycle dramatically more than we do. We need to conserve dramatically more than we do. We need to clean up our underground aquifers. We need those two dams that we promised in 1998 or 99 when I was Speaker of the Assembly. So Sykes and Temperance. We got to keep our deals if we're going to build the kind of trust you need to do a grand bargain on water. For all of those people who live in the cities and criticize farmers for using too much water, they say they have 20% of the population, they use 80% of the water. This is what I say to them. We eat and drink that water. We eat and drink those vegetables. Let's work together. Let's stop pointing fingers.
I think a lot of farmers would probably agree with you. And the grand bargain's a really interesting idea. But up next, we're going to talk to former L.A. mayor and gubernatorial candidate Antonio Villaraigosa, some of the other big perennial issues we're always facing here, things like crime, poverty, jobs, and education. That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. I'm Mark Kepler with the Maddie Institute. We're talking with former L.A. mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, who's running for California governor in 2018. Let's talk about an issue that's perennially on people's minds. Maybe it's the utmost thing when they think about government, and that is public safety. So while crime statistics are generally down, there's been a recent uptick in some crime statistics. Is this a one-off anomaly, or is this something more of a trend?
Well, we got to track it and look at it and use data to determine. Well, I was mayor, as you well know, 49% drop in violent crime, a 45% drop in homicides, a 55% a drop in gang crime, but also we grew our police department by 1,000 officers in the middle of a recession, but we also had the most innovative anti-gang prevention intervention programs in the nation.
So let me ask you a question. What do you say to people that say, you know, oh, the economy was just getting better, or it's three strikes was the reason why, tough on crime, that's the reason why crime went down? How would you respond to that?
It's just not true.
Okay.
Three strikes was in effect all through the 90s, all through most of the first part of the 2000s. My mayoralty was 2005 to 2013. The fact of the matter is we grew our police department by 1,000 officers because we were the most under-policed big city in the United States of America. We were the gang capital of the United States. We were tough on crime, but smart on crime. It just like all of these issues, and why it's hard to answer in a minute, is you got to have an approach of all of the above.
Comprehensive, yeah. It's interesting. The research shows that putting more police on the streets does have it's a good return on investment.
Better return on the investment than prisons.
Exactly. But there's a lot of dispute about, you know, why is that? Why are they trying crime trends down? Though they do give you a lot of credit for doing that. So let's kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about poverty, which is somewhat related. Obviously a big issue in inland California. You've also got this kind of silver tsunami, I think you've referred to, the aging baby boomers. And you think about poverty rates for them. A lot of them don't have savings. So the state's been talking about something called Secure Choice, an idea to create a state-administered pension plan for private employees. Where are you on that issue?
Well, as I said a few minutes ago in Spanish, look, it's a great idea. But I think we got to make sure that the state isn't left holding the bag. I've said, you know, I believe in defined benefits, not defined contributions.
And just for our audience, a defined benefit plan is a typical pension plan. Defined contributions like a 401k where you invest.
That's exactly right. But as we know, they have to be sustainable. We have to be able to make sure that we can pay them now and for the next generation. And I think we'll have to look at the same with this proposal. I don't know the details of it. I know that we can't put the state on the hook.
Well, the reality is if these people go into poverty, you're going to be paying, you know, social services for these folks. You're going to pay. The other interesting point is, you know, Fresno is one of the few cities in the United States that has a defined benefit plan for their police officers, for example, that's completely solid. It's completely funded. So there is a way to do that if it's done.
That's exactly right. Done intelligently, working with our unions and making sure that the next generation gets the same pension.
I know this is a big issue for you. I want to ask you about this. You know, this two-tier economy that exists in California where you have unemployment rates in the Valley that are twice as high as what you see in the Bay Area. And you were talking about some of the, you know, the rates of poverty in some of the cities, the unemployment levels very high. Reading somewhere that 8 of 10 metro areas with the worst unemployment nationally are in California. So what do we need to do to correct that imbalance?
And three of the top five are in
right in the Valley.
The Valley.
Right. And so how do we correct that imbalance between the coast and the inland areas?
Well, one of the things I've said, one of the reasons why we have the highest effective poverty rate is the cost of housing. That's why I have a housing plan that will put a housing trust fund that leverages cities and counties who put up their own money, bring back redevelopment. Also, enterprise zones. We eliminated enterprise zones in the middle of a recession. Enterprise zones are opportunities to identify high poverty, high unemployment areas, and provide tax credits to bring more businesses and diversify those economies. So I want to focus like a laser beam on places like the Central Valley. That's why I've spent so much time here on my listening tour and while I'm campaigning.
I will say that you have definitely spent a lot of time in the Valley. It's been a focus of your campaign. Inland California, both San Bernardino
that's exactly
area
right.
and the Valley. So
I'm going to the places that this state is left behind, and I say, I'm your candidate. And I'm your candidate because my whole life I've stood up for an economy and a society where we're growing together.
I've only got about a minute or so left in this segment, but I want to ask you this question because I know it's really important to you, and that's education. Trying to help people that, you know, whether it's Latino students that make up more than half of California schools or 1.4 million English learners, how do we help them be prepared for
all of our kids? Only 80% of our kids are graduating from our public schools. We've got to make sure that all of them get the education we need. But particularly the kids who are increasingly the majority who are even further behind. They're graduating at 70%. As I said, only 13% of them are going to a four-year college, and only 9% of the 13% are actually completing it. So what do we need to do? We need to show that we're doing more with the money we got. We need to extend the school day where we can. after school programs, make investments in our schools that bring back career technical education and others.
And I know that's been a big issue for you. So anyway, we're going to talk a little bit more with former L.A. mayor and California gubernatorial candidate Antonio Villaraigosa in a second. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. I'm Mark Kepler with the Maddie Institute. We're talking with California gubernatorial candidate and former L.A. mayor Antonio Villaraigosa about some of the big issues confronting California if or when he becomes California's next governor. So I want to talk to you about immigration. I know you wanted to say something, though, about early childhood education.
Finish that period real quick. We need to focus on early child education, universal preschool, full-day kindergarten. These kids are coming in too far behind, and it's a big reason why they're not making it at the end of the rainbow. So we got to make those investments early on. And that investment is a greater bang for the buck than even college.
Yeah, the research shows that by third grade, you know if someone's going to be successful, but then there's the cost. So there's always that balance, cost-benefit. Let me jump into immigration. I know we're covering a lot of issues. How do you feel about sanctuary state, sanctuary cities idea?
Well, the notion started in Los Angeles under Daryl Gates, a police chief, a very conservative police chief, who realized that there were many immigrants in Los Angeles who were not trusting the police, not coming forward as victims, or as witnesses. And so they said that our police force job is to protect the public safety, not to enforce our immigration laws. That's where it started. And now it's gone across
the
nation.
Because people go back into the shadows. You know, they're worried that they're going to be
deported. That's exactly right. What we need to do is fix our broken immigration system. It's broken. Let's give people a pathway to citizenship. They have to get at the end of the line. They can't have committed serious crimes. But, you know, they're contributing. They're living here. Let's fix this broken immigration system, not focus on things that really don't make any sense. What people don't realize, as an example, L.A. is the epicenter of the foreign-born, 44% foreign-born, the largest undocumented population of any city in the nation. Also, our economy's growing. Cities getting safer. The fact of the matter is, you know, we've done well with immigration in this city, well, and Fresno as well. And, you know, you wouldn't have an agricultural industry if you didn't have
I think most
these
farmers
people working it.
Would agree with you on that. Let me switch gears again and talk about health care, another really big issue. There's the issue about uneven access to health care. What is your prescription for what ails California's health care system?
Well, we got to protect the 3 to 5 million people who could lose their health care as a result of the proposals we see in the Congress and with the current administration in the White House. So I've said we've got to find cost containment. We've got to focus on prevention. We've got to look at what we can do to drive down drug costs.
Are you for single payer?
I'm not. And not because I'm not philosophically for the government paying for that care. There's a $400 billion price tag. You said earlier that I'm not a guy that just, you know, goes to the extremes. It's not that I don't believe that we should do like many countries, have government paid for health care. It's that we need a plan for it, and we need the money for it. And so what I want to do is protect the people currently who have health care as a result of the ACA, make sure that we drive down costs, that we identify places, you know, public option is a possibility where people can buy into Medi-Cal. Look at all of the things that we need to do to make sure that we're protecting the people who have health care.
You know, the current speaker, Anthony Rendon, had the same feeling about single payer, because it's a $400 billion price tag with no way to pay for it. So that was the issue there, so kind of similar.
I'm the author of Healthy Families. 750,000 kids got health care. I did that after proposing to expand Medi-Cal to 200% above poverty in 95 and 96. In 97, I passed it with Pete Wilson. It was a compromise, but 750,000 people got health care.
Let me transition to another topic, climate change. 97% of all scientists, climate scientists, according to NASA, say that climate warming trends are due to human activities. But studies also show that California only produces about 1% of global emissions. So how do you balance, you know, the issue of climate change with economic development in California?
Well, first of all, economic development, we're leading the nation in terms of our environmental standards, and we've created more green jobs, half a million during that time. I want to focus a lot more on creating green jobs, on creating jobs that pay people a middle class, wage. I also want to address the issue of pollution, because there's a lot of focus on carbon emissions and not enough focus on pollution. While I was mayor, we reduced our carbon emissions by 28%. Number one American city, number five in the world. We also became a clean tech capital of the world, green jobs, not of the world, of the United States. And we cleaned up our port, a 90% reduction in truck emissions. So
that's a big source, of pollution, the ports.
We got to do, yes, it is, and we got to do both.
Yeah, it's interesting, 40 years ago, my brother lived in Los Angeles, and you couldn't see anything. And now it's much better than it was, 30, 40 years
ago.
But
I want to say one last thing.
Sure.
There are a lot of people who work hard in the Valley, particularly in Bakersfield, who work in the oil industry. We can't just put them all out of business. This notion that, we're going to put these people out of business without, retraining people, without, creating other parts of the economy that are growing, doesn't make any sense.
But the way you see it is actually a green economy is a way to create more jobs and higher paying jobs.
That's exactly right.
Okay, I want to thank former L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa for joining us. He's running for governor of the state of California in 2018. If you want to stay up with state and local politics, you can sign up for the Matty Daily on our webpage at mattyinstitute.org. This is Mark Kepler for the Matty Report. Thanks for joining us.
The views and opinions expressed on the Matty Report are those of the individuals participating in the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the California Channel or the Matty Institute. If you'd like to share your thoughts about the points and opinions expressed on the Matty Report, visit our website at mattyinstitute.org.
The Matty Report, Valley Views Edition, is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio, Cumulus Media, and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on politics and important public policy issues. This is KMJ.